Good morning. Objectives of our meeting today is to examine how a dialysis facility used a CQI initiative to develop and implement an IV iron protocol. We're also going to assess the impact of our new IV iron protocol within our unit. And I'm just going to be talking about our unit and how we developed a protocol. First of all, what is a CQI initiative? It's a philosophy of management that requires members of a team to regularly monitor patient data and trends and to evaluate and update processes to produce better outcomes. Some of the key strategies are to organize a team, benchmark your current processes, see where you're at, identify opportunities for improvement, implement a plan, evaluate the results, and to revise the plan as necessary. And I know all of you went to nursing school and remember the nursing process, and it's the exact same thing. In a nurse-driven CQI process, the nurse manages the activities and movements of the CQI initiative, and we have involved the physicians in progress updates and in approval of changes. There are several benefits of a CQI initiative. One benefit is improved outcomes. A program allows you to look at your poor responders, see why they're not responding. It may include you need to switch your IV iron, to look at patient labs differently. Another benefit is increased patient satisfaction. As patients reach their target hemoglobin, they're going to be feeling better, they're going to be in the hospital less, they're going to have more energy, and these improvements in patient well-being will result in enhanced patient satisfaction with the overall hemodialysis experience and more confidence in the healthcare team. Another benefit is enhanced safety. A CQI program can prevent deviations from standard practices in dosing the iron and the epigen, and in a busy dialysis unit, there's always that chance of mistake, so the fewer times that you're changing a dose, the less chance of error. In the spring of 2004, the Kidney Institute of Wisconsin started a CQI initiative. We're currently an outpatient dialysis unit with 28 stations. At the time we started the study, we had about 75 patients, and now we have around 160 patients. We have 6 physicians, 10 nurses, 23 technicians, 2 dietitians and social workers, and a pharmacist. When we formed this team, we mainly used only one physician. Each physician in our group has kind of an area of expertise. One does PTH, one does infection, and one does the anemia. We purposely only used one physician because, as you know, if you would get more than one physician in a room, each one is going to have a little bit different idea, and it's just harder to get the ball rolling. Opportunities for improvement. The majority of our patients were experiencing high ferritin levels. Most of our patients had ferritin levels over 800, so we wanted to look at the reason for that. Using that process, we looked at our current IV iron environment and found opportunities for improvement. We consulted various personnel, reviewed current literature, and then we decided to switch from iron sucrose, which we were using, to sodium ferric gluconate. Because we were changing interventions, we decided it was very important to educate the staff. So we had people from the iron company come and give in services to the staff, which includes the nurses, techs, dietitians, social workers. Those people were also part of the team, and they each brought a little bit different perspective of anemia to the group. Our preliminary goals were to decrease the percentage of patients with serum ferritin greater than 800, also to increase and maintain the number of patients who had hemoglobins greater than 11. We also wanted to improve the balance of EPO and iron therapy, and we wanted to simplify or at least not complicate the process that we currently have. Step 4, we developed a plan of intervention. After deciding to implement a protocol using ferric gluconate, we decided we needed to look at optimal dosing parameters. And in deciding how much you should be giving the patients, it's important to consider what Andrea had said, that patients do lose between 1 and 3 grams of iron annually. They also have ongoing blood loss due to drawing labs, cells left in the dialysis system, clotted dialyzers, GI bleeds, surgery, access problems. Therefore, if you're using maintenance iron dosing, if you give 62.5 milligrams per week, they'll get roughly 1.6 grams of iron per year. Or if you use 125 milligrams of iron per week, they would be receiving around 3 grams per year. Ferrogluconate is available as a 62.5 milligram ampule of iron, and it offers a practical dosing option for therapy. You can give the entire amp at one time rather than giving part of it and throwing it away. And you know how nurses hate to waste anything, so it's important to us that we could use the entire vial and didn't have to waste anything. This slide just shows our basic iron protocol. This is also on the website that I mentioned before. The first section includes repletion, and that's iron that you give as a bolus, 125 milligrams times 8 doses, which equals 1 gram. Iron depletion is considered a TSAT of less than 20 and a ferritin of less than 100. The bottom part of the slide is how we do maintenance dosing, and these are only in patients with hemoglobins that are already over 11. For general assessment of those patients who do not achieve a hemoglobin over 11, we have a couple different tools that we use. The first tool is interventional supplementation, and it's used by the anemia manager in patients who are not achieving a hemoglobin of 11 despite IV iron and EPO therapy. It gives examples of lab values and different interventions that you can use. And all of these examples are KDOQI recommended and research-based. We also have a triage supplement that we use for those patients that have multiple conditions or multiple complications. And what that really is just your thought process on a piece of paper. It lists all the different things that you should be looking at to see why a patient is not responding to EPO or to iron. Step five, to implement the plan. After we evaluated the literature, we decided to go ahead with the IV iron protocol. Our unit, we give iron on lab draw day, so we give draw our labs at the beginning of the run. They get their IV iron dose that day, so the labs that you're getting are not affected by giving IV iron. With sodium ferrogluconate, you don't really need to wait 48 hours to get an accurate result, but because when we used iron dextran in the past, that always affected that, so we just kept it the same to keep it simple for the staff. This graph shows our outcomes after the implementation protocol. In March of 2004, our average ferritin level was 1,044. In December of 2004, after switching to ferrogluconate, we had our average ferritin was 624. This slide shows the percentage of patients with serum ferritin level greater than 800. In March, we were at a high of 64%, and it dropped down to 29% in December. More importantly, this slide shows that we administered more IV iron to more patients, and our average serum ferritin level still remained under 800. And all of these improvements occurred despite an increase in census of 116 patients to 145 patients. The improvement is possible even with new patients who haven't been on iron or EPO pre-dialysis. The important point is to start IV iron right away upon admission. We generally get labs from the physician's office or from the hospital of a new patient before they start, so on their first treatment they may be started on IV iron right away. The only time that you will look at numbers singly like that, one hemoglobin, one ferritin, and one TSAT, is on a brand new patient. After that, every time you look at numbers, you're looking at trends. You're looking at trends in the hemoglobin, the iron, and their medication dosing. Several reasons that we thought why our serum ferritin levels have improved. In a 2002 study by Zager and Agarwal, they felt that ferrogluconate caused a smaller inflammatory response, leading to reduced ferritin level. Also, giving ferrogluconate 62.5 milligrams per week or every other week offered better control of serum ferritin levels than us giving iron sucrose and we were giving 50 to 100 milligrams per week. This slide just shows the percentage of patients that were over a hemoglobin of 11. In May of 04, we had 76% of our patients with a hemoglobin over 11, and by the end of our study in December, it rose to 86%. We felt that the improved hemoglobin response was due to the use of ferric gluconate, the steady increase in the percentage of patients receiving IV iron, and the unit's consistent adherence to the new iron protocol. We also suggested that the increase in patients achieving target hemoglobin levels could be attributed to the more aggressive treatment of inflammatory processes. Andrea did cover that we currently, when depending on TSAT and ferritin, we will give someone a gram of iron to see if they have functional iron deficiency and see if their hemoglobin does improve with that. This slide shows our balance. When we first started out, only 33% of our patients were receiving IV iron because the iron was being held because their ferritin level was so high. In September, we reached a high EPO dose of 83,000 units on average. Once we hit that peak, then we balanced off in December of that year. 67% of our patients were on IV iron, and our average EPO dose dropped from 85,000 to 66,000. Finally, our feedback showed that the new protocol is not more complicated than the previous process that we had. In fact, it made the iron management process a lot easier for us, considering that during this period, our patient population did increase by 34%, and the percentage of patients with hemoglobin levels greater than 11 did increase by 10%. And also, to reiterate back to what I had said, at this point, you're always looking at trends. You're never looking at one number alone. And this next slide will show, this is the slide that we, this is a note that we use for charting. The note report, it's a template. You can fill in the blanks, patient name, type of note, the date, description of what the note is anemia, who the person is. We always list our target hemoglobin level, whatever the EPO dose is that's changed, the rationale for changing it. If you change your iron dose, you can list that, and then there's a place to put the suspected cause of low hemoglobin. This information is very important to get to justify your EPO and iron dosing and to get correct reimbursement. This information is probably going to change on our notes along with once the new KDOQI anemia guidelines come out. They're going to be released this spring at the NKF Spring Clinical in Chicago. And it's going to be very important that you show a 25% decrease in EPO dosing if the patient's hemoglobin gets over 13. If you choose not to decrease your dosing by 25%, Medicare will choose to pay you 25% less. This slide just shows a report. We have a computer system, and we can put in a date range, and it'll show us all the information that we need to look at one time. It lists the hemoglobin, TSAT, ferritin, and all the different medications. And after Andrea's presentation, I was writing down additions. We're going to put URR, TIBC, and PTH level on there. Then at one picture, you can see if someone's not meeting it, it's going to have all your lab values that you can look at all at one time. So in this is a three-month range. It has your hemoglobin, it has your TSAT and ferritin, and then you can look to see how the iron and the EPO doses have changed over time. This report allows the anemia manager to follow a consistent train of thought, and it also makes it easier for another nurse to come in. She can look back at the last note, kind of see the trends, what the person before her did, and then do a very similar change. In the past, we had two anemia managers because we had we've got 160 patients, so it does take a lot of time. But the two of them decided it was easier for one person just to do it, and then the other person is the backup. You might decide within your unit it's easier to have each nurse or have just a couple nurses to do it. I think it's easier to have more, to have fewer people doing it, have one or two people doing it. Then that thought process is consistent, and the consistency stays the same. The final step of the process is to revise the plan as necessary. We concluded our goals were achieved. We did get patients' ferritins down under 800, but the CQI process requires that you're always looking at the trends and always maintaining, trying to keep your trend and to improve it. So in order to do this, you need to always keep reviewing your processes and make decisions as needed. For proactive iron dosing, our goals after 2004, goals for 2005, we found we had quite a few patients that once they started getting iron routinely, their hemoglobin would be 11 and all of a sudden it would be up to 14. So now, especially with the new guidelines, the new reimbursement, we are looking at ways to cut back the EPO and or the iron dose a lot sooner before they soar up into that high range. So someone going from 11 to 12.3, which is in range, within 1 month, we would start cutting the dose back already, because in the next month, they're going to be 13.5 or 14. And then we are also looking at estimating the iron needs of patients, especially new patients that go from 8 to 11, just giving them enough iron for that process, plus giving them enough iron to offset the losses that they have during dialysis. This just reiterates iron replacement in an average dialysis patient. Stable patients, they lose between 1 and 2 grams of iron per year. They use roughly 15 to 25 cc's of whole blood per treatment session. And that's without any adverse events, their needles falling out, dialyzer clotting, whatever. At a hemoglobin of 11.7 or a hematocrit of 35%, 3 cc's of blood equals 1 milligram of iron. And an additional 1 milligram of iron is lost each day through the GI tract. So in order to estimate their iron needs, you need to remember all the iron losses that can occur in a dialysis patient. This is a slide that Andrea had shown also. It just gives you an idea, a picture view of how much iron and why the patients lose iron. There's normal iron losses, blood retained in the dialyzer, accidental losses, needle falls out, clotted dialyzer. Some people have a lot of lab tests drawn for PTH or for protimes, hemoglobins. There's always, some tests that they want a PSA, and so they do have a lot of blood draws done monthly also. Maintenance therapy meets the patient's ongoing iron needs. A continuous source of iron is needed to optimize the body's supply of iron so you can continually make red blood cells. You need to look at the patient's needs, what they need, and to make sure you give enough iron to bring them up. If they are below 11, to give them enough iron to go from 8 or 9 up to 11. By adhering to a maintenance treatment, by giving so much every week or every other week, rather than loading, giving them a gram, stopping, waiting to see what happens, giving them another gram, it's much easier to give a continual low dose of iron. Loading and holding also involves having to write orders to start the drug, stop the drug, do it over and over. And with a small weekly dose of iron, this extra task of writing those orders is eliminated. In conclusion, an effective adjustable dosing protocol can optimize anemia management. You can stabilize your hemoglobin values and improve patient outcome, improve the balance of EPO and iron dosing, which is very important, decrease wastage of drug and potential medication errors, and remind the anemia managers and clinicians that patient-specific interventions are still needed. Each patient needs to be looked at as an individual, and by utilizing the different assessment tools, it'll take you through the process of what you need to look at to see where the patient is at. You also need to remember that you continually have to look at your numbers. If you all of a sudden, for the last 2 years, 84% of your patients have had a hemoglobin greater than 11, what about the other 16% that are out there? You have to keep looking at the reasons, and the reasons can change. We were looking at ferritin 2 years ago, and now we're looking at how much IV iron we give, how much iron they use, and trying to overshoot the top of the goal. So you have to keep looking at your outcomes. You might still have the same percentage of patients in that range, but the reasons for that is going to be changing, so you need to constantly look at that. And that is the true definition of CQI. Now I guess we're going to be going through any questions. If you've used your cards, there should be someone collecting the cards. They'll bring them up and we'll answer specific questions. Okay.